This is Red Ice Radio, a beacon of sanity from Northern Europe. RedIceCreations.com.
Welcome to all new and regular listeners. Red Ice Radio is the name of the program, and my name is Henrik Palmgren. I hope you're doing well wherever you are on the planet. It's always a pleasure to be able to have you guys with us as we continue our investigations, trying to get answers to the bigger questions and the mysteries of this world and beyond. RedIceCreations.com, that's our website for news, the free radio program, and much more. If you're a member, go to the new website, redicemembers.com, and click into any program to log in and listen or watch. That's the new place for you to go as a member to listen to our program in full. Always go there, redicemembers.com. Bookmark it. It's a slightly new routine, but not a very difficult one. And once you get the hang of it and discover our new features on the website, I think you'll agree and discover that it's much easier, just better. Today, we're talking to William Dean A. Garner. He was formerly trained as a research biophysicist with a background in physics and electrical engineering. Following his tour in Army Special Operations, he worked for international private military companies. He's the best-selling author of 17 ghost-written books and has also edited many books, including Angels and Demons and The Da Vinci Code by Dan Brown. In addition to ghostwriting and editing, Dean has mentored 6 New York Times best-selling authors, and he's currently a book publisher. He joins us today to discuss his latest book, Who Really Owns Your Gold? The Intended Global Meltdown of 2012 to 2014. Stay with us for much more. All right, welcome to Red Ice Radio, Dean. It's really good to have you with us here today. This is an interesting, important topic. I'm looking forward to diving into it. So also thank you for contacting us and want to get on the program, of course, and talk about it. First of all, welcome and thank you for coming on.
Well, I do appreciate that and taking the time. I've always been very excited to be on your show. Thank you.
Excellent. Now, for newcomers to you and to your work, maybe there's an easy way you could just kind of introduce yourself a little bit to our audience, and also pertaining to obviously the topic that we're going to discuss and talk about here today, Dean.
Well, I was trained as a scientist in physics and engineering, and I did science for 13 years. Started out in marine biology, studying electric fields and how sharks detect them around their prey and in the open ocean. And then I went into the lab and studied neurobiology, stuck electrodes in brain cells, and studied mechanisms of memory storage in the brain. And since I had mapped out a plan when I was in ninth grade at about age 14, 15, my next goal was to join the Army. So at age 35, shortly before, I joined the Army and became a U.S. Army Airborne Ranger with the 1st Ranger Battalion. So I was in special operations for 4.5 years. And then when I got out, honorable discharge in 1998, I started 2 international private military firms, and I did 211 overseas missions over about a 9-year period, off and on. And at the same time, I was writing and editing books, which is how you know me.
Really good. Now, how did you get onto the gold trail, then, if we can call it that?
Well, a friend of mine asked me to focus on gold, but the story really goes back to about 1980, 1981, when I was in college in Washington, D.C. And I used to go to all the embassy parties in D.C. because my parents were in the Green Book, and they got invitations weekly, practically. And so I was at an embassy party once, and this gentleman came running across the room and accosted me, and he said, he'll be the death of us all. And I said, who? And he said, Brzezinski. And so I looked up Dr. Zbigniew Brzezinski, who at the time, actually a couple of years before, had been President Jimmy Carter's national security advisor. Actually, if you read into it, he was actually his handler. And so I started reading anecdotally over the next about 30 years who ran the world and how. And over the past 4 years, I've been doing it very intensively. And again, someone suggested I focus specifically on gold, given that that is the only real money in the world. And they were very interested in what I came up with. So I put together a nice compilation of information, again, about who really runs the world and how, focusing on the gold issue. And that's how the book came about.
Really good. Full title is Who Really Owns Your Gold? And the subtitle is The Intended Global Meltdown of 2012. We're kind of in the thick of it right now, of course. But what would you say a little bit of to preface this topic about gold and the importance of gold? There's a long history here. You cover it in some of the beginning of your book. And kind of, I guess, how we've ended up in the situation where we are today. It's a big topic, of course, but maybe you can kind of summarize that a little bit for us.
Well, you've got a few questions in there, and they're wide-ranging. But let me just discuss the title itself. Who really owns your gold? It's owned by a group of dynastic men in Rome, and it's not the Vatican. And gold itself, of course, has been a very precious commodity, and it's been the only real money that ever was. Why it wasn't platinum or silver or some other precious metal or even some gem or some other material object, I'm not certain. But people have always, at least humans, have always worshipped the power of gold. The book itself is not so much about gold, but it's who really runs this world of ours and how they do it. And it's really with respect to the United States and our history, our government, our social structure, military structure. So, and it's also a short book. I call it a 69-minute book, which is a new line of books we have. And it's a book you can read in about an hour. And if you read a little fast, then you can probably get there. But it's meant to be short and sweet and very dense, uranium dense, and packed with lots of energy, high voltage information about, again, who really runs the world and how.
Do you want to tell us a little bit more about the men in Rome who actually is behind this, and how you came to this conclusion?
Yes, well, yeah, that's the punchline. I mean, who really owns everything and who runs everything? For thousands of years, all roads have led to Rome in one way or the other. And since about 1541, the Society of Jesus, or the Jesuits, have sent out, they've diffused their Jesuits all over the world and ingratiated themselves with royalty and with the highest government officials, and slowly taken over every single government, every monetary system, every economic system, every social system. So those are the folks today and people argue with me all the time about this. I mean, how could they possibly do that? Well, if you read their history, if you study their history very carefully, and it doesn't take that much studying, I'm thinking maybe 100 hours, if every person out there, the people I refer to as we the people, you know, every good person in the world, would just take about 100 hours and study the patterns of the Society of Jesus, you would have no problem coming to the same conclusions that I have, because there have been books out there that have been written over the past several hundred years, in particular, say the past 150 to 200 years, all of which have been suppressed, by the way, that show definitively all the patterns of their behavior, that show definitively that these people have their tried and true methods that they use to subjugate the will and the rights of people all over, and have done it in almost every single country on this planet.
And yet, Dean, we hear today that their power, you know, is at least a Catholic Church, maybe not addressed directly to the Jesuits per se, but that their power and influence is diminishing and their role is largely symbolic today. What would you say to that?
Well, then we get into the study of religion and the topic of religion. And I usually try to avoid that, because religion to me is all false. It was designed as a means of control more than 2,000 years ago. If you study the basic Bibles of all religions, they all pretty much have the same theme, and it looks like they came from the same place. They took the same story, the same information from the same person or persons who originally wrote it. The Jesuits have have had soldiers, and they are a militant army, by the way, they've had soldiers whose job, whose sole responsibility has been to rewrite various passages in every Bible across the world, and which is probably one of the most dangerous things you can do, because if you control a religion, you control the people, and if you control the people, you control the society and everything else in it.
Mm.
So, again, I try to avoid the topic of religion itself, because these people don't represent the Catholic Church. They don't represent Muslims. They don't represent Judaism. They use religion as a tool, as a controlling method to keep we the people in a certain place wherever they want. They steer us in various directions wherever the need be. And again, still using religion as a tool. But the Catholic religion, even though it may have lost a few members over the years, as you were suggesting there, it doesn't matter to the Jesuits, because the face, one of the faces of the Society of Jesus, is the Catholic Church. And it really doesn't necessarily matter whether they control through the Catholic Church, because they have other means of control. They can control socially, economically, politically. And even though the Catholic Church has been their primary means of control, they certainly control the just about all other religions. So it really doesn't matter whether the Catholics have lost a few followers here and there.
Okay. Now, what do you see as America's role in this, and if there is any interface between the Jesuits and the Catholic Church and America?
Well, the United States is really the last bastion of freedom and liberty in the world. Every other country has been brought to its knees. They are under the fold. They're in the fold. They're under the control of the Jesuits. And America, since its inception, and back then it was referred to as the New World, since its inception has been a focus of control by the Jesuits. They sent people here to set up the first central bank, and they did it with their accountants, the Rothschild family. And the Rothschilds have been their accountants since, oh geez, late 1700s, as far as I know. And so the Jesuits sent armies of men to help set up the first central bank. They used the Rothschild bastard, Alexander Hamilton, who I say is not a traitor to the country, because the country is just a corporation, but he's a traitor to we the people. And they also got in, ingratiated themselves to the highest levels of U.S. government, the state governments, and they slowly took over control of the government and steered the United States of America in various directions, wherever they wanted it to go. The idea has been to bring all of America into their fold, to have full control over the social, political, military, economic status and systems here in this country. And over the past 10 years alone, they have almost met their goal. And I think the past 10 years have been a very, very telling time in our history, because they have ramped up, the Jesuits and their accountants, the House of Rothschild, they've ramped up, or they've had to ramp up, their machinations to coincide with certain celestial physical events out there beyond Earth.
That's interesting. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, the celestial physics, it's my term, but it's really a bastardization of celestial physics. I like to use it as one word. Celestial physics, it is the study of the physics of celestial and solar and lunar bodies and their effects on geophysical and biophysical events and activities, actions on Earth.
Absolutely. Now, okay, to counter a little bit there and to play the other side of this, many people argue, of course, that there's other people in charge primarily of the of the banking system with as you said before, with the Rothschilds being in charge, the Rockefellers, the Morgans of the world, and some people say it's a flat out, it's a Jewish banking conspiracy. What is the interface then between these different groups out there, if you will, that many people are looking at, and how is the connection, if you will, between something like the Rothschilds and the Jesuits? Because that's seemingly, at least on from the outside, kind of that's an opposition almost there, you'd think.
Yeah, you know, it's counterintuitive, I agree. But the fact is, these people aren't religious. And if they are, they worship some pagan demon. And I do not say that with tongue in cheek. I'm quite serious about expressing that sentiment. The Jesuits themselves have always stayed underground, and they've had public faces. The public faces have been their controlled politicians, their controlled social faces. Nowadays, like the people in Hollywood, and we have all the stars and actors, actresses, and other members of the media who are the public faces, the public voice of the Jesuits. The Rothschilds themselves, the House of Rothschild, a very clever family. They're anything but Jewish. They're I call them Khazar Jews from the old land Khazaria, which is now Russian Georgia. And I've known and spoken with whistleblowers within their organization who said they don't practice any Judaism whatsoever. Their public face is, yes, that of these very wealthy Jews. However, they're anything but Jewish by any standard whatsoever. So, again, the Jesuits tend to stay underground, and they've had public faces. Now, you have to have a public face out there, especially when you're trying to control something, because you need a target for we the people to throw something at and to scream at and also to revere. So the House of Rothschild and these other great organizations, and I don't mean great as in magnanimous. I mean great as in simply large and huge. These other organizations, they have sort of ingratiated themselves into our society and with our people, with we the people especially, by philanthropic organizations and by having established philanthropy in general in the U.S. because they give away so much and they do help people, at least indirectly. And so this public face turns out to be sort of double-sided. We have the on one side the philanthropy, and on the other side it's an evil machination that follows the book of the Society of Jesus, the Jesuits.
Now, you say in your book, of course, that as a quote from J.P. Morgan, that money really is, or gold really is, the money. Is there any history
Everything
to that?
Everything else is credit.
Right, exactly. That's what he says. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, almost exactly 100 years ago to the month, J.P. Morgan sat in some congressional hearing, and he said, "Gold is money. Everything else is credit." And he was really just sort of poking us in the eye and rubbing our nose in the fact that he controlled the money system in the United States by the good grace of the Society of Jesus. And he was revealing what should have stayed and remained a secret, that yes, gold is in fact the only form of money, not just in the United States, but all over the world. Gold is the only form of money. Everything else is credit, which means that we, and I'm speaking as J.P. Morgan right now, which means that we can print money out of thin air, create money out of thin air. We can issue loans and other forms of credit. We can collect interest on those loans, all that credit, when the principal didn't even exist. So again, he was really rubbing our nose in the fact that he and the Jesuits controlled the money system, and they could get rich off us via this credit.
And how did they pull this off, do you think? Because it's a pretty interesting system. As you said before, it seems like mankind has venerated gold. They've had that for a long time as the transaction. So it seems to me then that they early in the game, the Jesuits, as you argue, and also then later through the agents being more J.P. Morgan, Rothschilds, Rockefellers, etc., have gotten in on this game and basically try to take over the gold of the world. Is that pretty much how it's played out in your view?
Yes. And again, because they have seen that gold is the true money, hoarding gold has been their objective. Now, we have to understand something, that it's a concept that most people will not get, because in this country we live by the quarter system. And we live and die by the Wall Street quarter system. However, the Jesuits, the Society of Jesus, they work on 25-year plans, 50-year plans, 100-year plans. So they will do an experiment, say, in 1961, and then another one in 1969, and then another 30 years will go by before they, say, do phase two of that experiment. The only exception now is because of celestial events that have been peaking. Actually, they've just about peaked over the past month. That is celestiophysically. The Society of Jesus has had to ramp up and accelerate its machinations. And in America, we can see that very readily. Over the past year, 10 years alone, there's the inception of the Homeland Security. There was the Patriot Act. Of course, there was 9/11, which was the problem reaction solution, false flag attack. And of course, there was the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, again, Patriot Act, the healthcare bill. If you look at all these, it's been an unprecedented attack on the U.S. Constitution. In fact, the NDAA, again, the National Defense Authorization Act, alone effectively strips all members, we the people, all Americans, of their constitutional rights.
So what's in for 2012 here? It seems to be a pinnacle year, as many people have pointed out, for different reasons. And people argue that the globalists, the people in charge, are going to play this out during 2012, with not much more time to go in 2012. Where do you see this going here in the last stretch of 2012?
Well, yeah, no, good question. And the fact is, some of the biggest machinations have already occurred, especially over the past 10 years. We're now going to see the after effects in 2013, 2014, probably all the way up into about 2020. And the after effects will be a collapsed or a near collapse of the economy. And when I want to correct myself. It's not going to be a total collapse. And here's why. And this is just my hypothesis. And I want to stress this. I have no other evidence other than what I've read. But during the collapse of the Weimar Republic in the early 1920s, I think that the Society of Jesus, the Jesuits, learned that if you collapse a society totally, economically, politically, socially, then it becomes absolutely unruly, and it makes it very, very hard to control. I don't think they're going to make the same mistake with the United States. I think that it's only going to be a partial collapse in which people lose their homes, people lose jobs, lose a lot of money, trillions of dollars. But it's not going to be a total collapse, because if it were, and I think this is what's unique to the United States and to we the people, we would get up and kick some ass. The people in the United States have known nothing but freedom and liberty for more than 270 years. There is absolutely no way that we would allow some entity, if we knew about it as a whole, if we had mutual knowledge, if we knew about this, that we would let them get away with this. So I think that this is going to be a very, very difficult fight for the powers that be, the Jesuits, to ultimately take over America completely without another revolution.
And yeah, and many people argue that that's kind of coming around the corner here. Is this, despite what you talk about in Chapter 8, that we the people are still comatose? And I guess this would apply to the American people as the global population, pretty much, that many people are, in fact, asleep and they wouldn't get out and do something about it. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. And it's been designed this way because we've had, just look at it. We have Hollywood that that has a it's a form of entertainment, but it's also been a form of spreading information and disinformation, and it's been a form of control for almost 100 years. And of course, there's big media out there, and we have all these reality TV shows. And just getting off on a tangent, if you look at just over the like the past 5 years alone, the explosion of reality TV shows and these absolutely mindless television shows has exploded. And it's,
yeah, sure.
It's unprecedented. And it's another means of sort of pacifying the American people, we the people, so that they are numb to any other bad news that doesn't come from big media. That is from that may come from alternative media, and it allows further control of our rights, even though they've already been stripped.
Indeed, it does. Now, in your view, is there remedy against this? I mean, because I've always seen revolution, if we can call it that, with two different points of view. And one is, yes, it's understandable that it happens. I definitely understand that people need and should go. Or get upset and angry about how they are being treated and have been being treated. But if we look back historically to revolutions and with the books like Fire in the Minds of Men by James H. Billington, who's done a study into revolutionary movements, it seems like most of them have been controlled and instigated, or if not sidetracked or kind of hijacked along the way. Therefore, very, very difficult and dangerous also to participate in these kind of rise-ups and revolutions, because you, in effect, might actually be participatory in helping out the globalist elite to play out their agenda, if you will.
Well, you took the words right out of my mouth. I have nowhere to go with that. Exactly.
Is there any way we can remedy that? Can we get smarter beyond that and still have a revolution? Or what's affixed to this in your view, Dean?
Well, the answer is yes. We can have a revolution that is genuinely generated by we the people. The revolutions of the past were instigated and caused directly by the Society of Jesus, at least back to 270 years ago. And they were controlled from within, because that's the only way you can really control any kind of movement from within, with their own disinformation agents, with their own high-ranking members of each of those groups. So what can we do? The best thing, well, first, here's a really sad statistic. The Society of Jesus has had 470-something years to do its various machinations, to spread the disinformation, the bad news, to take over governments, to take over economies and societies. They've had hundreds of years to do this. And right now, if I were to be the architect of change, I have virtually no time at all. So I'm fighting hundreds of years and lots of really cool, slick advertising on the part of the Jesuits. And it's an uphill battle, but the director answer is that everybody, all members of We the People, in all countries, not just the United States, simply have to be informed of the basic accurate facts, the basic accurate truth. And I delineate truth in two ways. I call it the accurate truth, what really happens. And the other truth is the Jesuits' truth, which is what they change to fit their agenda. So what do? We get informed. And I think that's happening now, especially with the advent and power of the internet, which they are trying to control and probably eventually will.
So what would you say is the goal for America specifically? If it's not total collapse that you mentioned before, it seems to me anyway that maybe they're trying to rebuild it into something that is more shaped in accordance with how they see how they want to use America in the future. More control, more regulation, perhaps even more military. I don't know. What's your view on this?
Well, for one, and I've stated this in some old blogs I had, their end game is to create a mono-nation, a single nation, single government with fascist rule. And also, since there are just entirely too many people to control, a great deal of eliminating, euthanizing, murdering, whatever, a great deal of the population. So the end game is control of the United States, bring them into the world fold, because we already have the European Union, which has been an absolute joke. There's the African Union. There's a very loose sort of Pacific Union and Pacific Asiatic Union that are all but controlled by the Jesuits right now. Jesuits have taken several hundred years to effect these changes. The last bastion, again, of freedom and liberty is the United States. So they want to bring us into the fold. And their idea is to have a Chinese or Chinese communist style government and society. It would be based on a martial society, so there will no longer be wars that I can foresee, except a war against the people to keep we the people in line.
Kind of like the George Orwell version of the future here, basically.
Yes, and I think one of the reasons why the powers that be want to squelch the internet and the power of it is because we the people can form flash mobs. We can disseminate information, not quite at the speed of light, but in a romantic way, at the speed of light, and gather people, alert people, teach people, inform people. That's a very dangerous thing to happen, especially if you are a member of the Society of Jesus, if you're in charge of that organization. When you have lost control over the very people that you wish to control. So the internet really provides that final tool. Now, you might be asking, why don't these people just shut it off altogether? Well, again, and it goes along the lines of they're having 25, 50, and 100-year plans. They tend to work very slowly. Because if you introduce any kind of legislation or any kind of change, social change, moral change, religious, political, whatever, too fast, then people get a knee-jerk reaction and they stop. But if you introduce it slowly over dozens of years, then people they grumble a little bit. You give them back a little bit, some concessions. But then we, the people, end up accepting it. So it has to be slow. Now, the exception there is over the past 10 years, because of the advent of the internet and the rising power of it, is to introduce some of these controlling legislation and acts and other laws a little bit faster, because I think that and I liken what the Jesuits are doing right now. They're sort of coming in for a landing, and they're having to adjust for crosswinds and for temperature changes, and they have to change runways because of what some sort of weather pattern that just came in. Over the past 10 years, they've had to adjust things according to celestial physics, because the physics perhaps to them has not been perfect. Things have changed. Things have evolved in ways that they hadn't planned. So they're having to accelerate their machinations. Sometimes they pull back a little bit, but they've definitely accelerated things to the point that we the people can see their machinations. And now I think that, again, with the power of the internet, we can disseminate the accurate information, the accurate truth to more people.
Now, we've talked with other people about this too. There's a danger, I think, from their point of view of accelerating the game too quickly and too fast, because there is a lot of headway ahead for them if they want to pull a lot of these things off before the end of 2012 here. And I mean, again, you referenced the EU. I mean, that's pretty much in shambles. The Eurozone is coming apart at the seams, but I mean, I have my personal theory why and how they've done this, specifically for what purpose. But right now, on the official level anyway, it's not nearly anywhere in terms of completion. It's the opposite. It's going backwards. This is impossible to pull off before 2012, in my view. Maybe you have a different timeline on that, though. Maybe we can clarify that a bit.
Yeah, I think so. Again, that's why the subtitle, I had changed it from the intended global meltdown of 2012 to the intended global meltdown of 2012 to 2014. And again, that has to do with celestial physical events. Now, even though that the the Celestia planets, the sun and the moon, have their effects on us. The after effects, or the result of those physical effects, those physical impingements, they aren't necessarily seen right away. There's a lag in there. There's a certain hysteresis too. And this lag, I think, is what's confounding the Jesuits, because we were supposed to see a huge increase in magnitude 6 earthquakes and other geophysical activity as a result of intense celestial and solar and lunar activity. But we haven't seen that. It was predicted, and I have a feeling that it's not coming in 2012, but it's probably more like 2014, which is why I expanded my subtitle out to 2014. I made a mistake when I said probably about 10, 15 minutes ago that the worst has already happened over the past month. But the fact is it happened. It did out there in the universe, but the effects, that we're not going to see those effects probably for the next couple of years or over the next couple of years.
Now, there's a book you reference here, and I want to make sure we mention that as well, that specifically goes more into the celestial influences, if you will. I'm trying to just go back here and find it. Maybe you have it, you can recall it and mention that to our listeners as well.
Okay, yeah, sure. Well, there was a... First, let me just get a little bit of history about celestial physics and the study of it by American scientists. People were studying, I mean, legitimate scientists, good researchers, good thinkers, were studying how celestial physics and celestial activity and solar and lunar activity affect geophysical and biophysical processes on Earth. And they were doing it up until about the mid to late 1880s. And then all of a sudden... And they were publishing in reputable journals and also in newspapers and magazines. All of those disappeared toward the end of the 1880s. And curiously, that corresponds to and is coincidental with the coalescing of just about all of the major magazines and newspapers and broadsheets, whatever, across the United States. So the... And that also corresponds to the disappearance, curiously, of most of the books that show the deadlight of the Jesuits. So the Jesuits, around 1880s, they finally succeeded in their goal to suppress just about all the information that was negative to them, or that was about astronomy and astrology. And astrology is a very real science, by the way. That would have given we the people a great tool to use against the Jesuits. So again, here we have people who are studying celestial events and solar and lunar events and how they affected, say, plant growth or economic cycles here on Earth and in the United States. Those, again, were suppressed. All that information was pretty much lost to the worldwide public until around 1947, when Dewey and Dakin wrote a beautiful book called Cycles. And I have several original copies in different places in case I lose one of those or somebody confiscates those.
Right.
But Cycles tells pretty much the same story about how external, that is, off-planet influences can and do directly affect life on Earth. And they also create these long-term and short-term cycles of boom and bust, of good growth and bad growth, plants, corn, wheat, whatever. So there's a definite pattern to all these cycles. Now, that book itself was largely suppressed. You really can't find that anywhere, but you'd be hard-pressed if you could find an original copy. And I think maybe some PDF copies might be available out there. But that is probably an excellent primer, even though it's very dry and it's only a couple of hundred pages, but still very dry reading. It would give any reader, I think, enough knowledge to know that celestial influences on planet Earth are very real. Not only that, they create these cycles these high and lows, the boom and busts, the good and bad cycles, however you'd like to label them, that directly affect all the geophysical and biophysical events, all the economic events, all the social events that we have on planet Earth. And what's interesting is that the powers that be use these cycles and to exacerbate their effects. For example, right now we're in the highest period of celestial and solar and lunar activity on Earth. That is, all of the physical, and I mean as in terms of physics, all of the physical effects are pretty much peaking right about now or over the past month.
Mm-hmm.
And those effects have created large scale waves in the cycles that I spoke of. Those cycles are known by the powers that be, and the powers that be have used and continue to use as we speak the data from those cycles, when they will occur, what their magnitude will be, what their duration will be. And so they use that information to create these periods of booms and busts. They essentially ride the wave. Now, the wave is a natural one. We would naturally have periods of low and high activity here on Earth, but those would be at a much probably lesser magnitude than what we see today. And so there's a hidden hand, again, the Jesuits, who come in and who know these physical events. And you know, not to beat the horse to death, but they ride that wave to exacerbate the effects in the economy, socially, militarily, politically, just about any subject out there that they can control because they have this knowledge. So they've tried to keep that away and suppress the information, keep it away from we the people. Because look at it this way. If we had that information, if I could tell you when to get in and out of the stock market, think of what you could do with that.
Yeah, indeed. Now, this is very interesting. I can't recall how many articles we have published in the past about this. A couple of headlines is Britain's biggest banks use astrology to play the markets. Even the solar cycle connected to the ups and downs of the stock market, you know, in terms of the basically what level of sunspots you have actually controls it on a subtle level. This has been out there, in the back of the papers, if you will, on the more... Yep. Not on the front page news of the online newspapers, if I put it that way. But this then yes. seems to be, if there is such a thing as a religion of the elite. I mean, one famous quote from J.P. Morgan, I recall, is millionaires don't use astrology, billionaires do.
Yes, exactly. That's a very good point. Yeah, millionaires are just peons to them. Yeah, astrology has been around for thousands of years, and the powers that be were given that information. That is, the humans were given that information several thousand years ago. And when they saw the power of it, they marginalized astrology to the back pages. And that's a tongue-in-cheek response description, but the fact is, astrology is a joke today, but it's quite real. The influence of the planets, the celestia, the influence of the sun, the influence of the moon are known to many, many people. We know that at least intuitively. And a lot of people out there, we have members of We the People, do believe in what today is modern astrology, even though I think a lot of that is wrong and how it impinges on each of us personally. But that's a whole different conversation. Astrology, yes, I wouldn't call it astrology being used by the Jesuits. I would term more that celestiophysics. Astrology today, as we know it, has more to do with how the planets specifically impinge upon or leave their mark upon us when we're born, which is, I think, a fallacy because it doesn't happen when we're born. It happens probably at the moment of conception when our DNA is actually first coalesces and becomes our own DNA. Yes, the billionaires use celestiophysics. They have intimate knowledge of it. They can ride these waves and exacerbate the effects of those waves in their favor, or they can create wars. Because these effects on Earth would have happened normally anyway. However, they would not be the same magnitude, as I said before.
So, as you said, they're riding the wave of this, taking the opportunity to get ahead in the game with the aid and the use of these the flow of the energy of where you should play your cards basically at the right time.
Exactly.
And hence, they gain an upper hand over us because, as we know, if we look back into the history and with the aid of the Catholic Church, a lot of this knowledge has been taken out, exterminated, and downplayed as being the work of the devil, basically, right? So
Exactly. And, you know, since these guys have trillions of dollars to work with, they have super slick advertising. They have super slick disinformation advertising. So any kind of information they put out there, I'm impressed with. I mean, I love seeing some of these cool commercials and some of the movies that have this crazy Jesuit and, well, other people call it Illuminati, but Jesuit symbolism. And I marvel at the beautiful graphics, the beautiful people, the design, the overall design, because I love doing design on my own. And I'm just amazed at how beautifully they do it. So what normal, hot-blooded American would not fall for that? Because it's beauty in motion. Their forms of slick advertising and the way that they disseminate their information. I'm super impressed.
Well, I would agree with you. And it's been many documentaries of this, how they use archetypal symbolism and everything else, and solar, stellar themes, astrology is incorporated into it, and
yeah.
The archetypal motifs are there even in fashion photography, and although some of them don't seem to know how, you know, really what they're doing, they know enough that someone told them what to do and how to do it, because that simply works, you know, so it's, yeah,
exactly.
I agree.
Exactly, because, you know, the people who are actually designing these things are on a need-to-know basis. They are given people, and even directors in Hollywood, they're given a general directive from higher, from a Jesuit, whether it's a Jesuit coadjutor or a direct Jesuit, and one of those might be, okay, how about you make a film about Armageddon, and then I want to see a couple of these little symbols in there, or this type of symbolism in there. And it's a very, very general thing. And it's pretty much the same type of order sequence that you see in the U.S. military or any other military. A general gives a bunch of colonels a very general order. Okay, go take that hill over there. And all the colonels go out to their respective brigades, and that they tell their lieutenant colonels, the battalion commanders, okay, I want you to take that hill, but you guys have part A, you guys have part B, C, and D. And so it gets more specific the further down the line you get. And so the person at the very bottom has a very, very specific duty, doesn't know what's going on above him or her, let alone what's going on at the very top.
Now, we have a couple of more minutes here until we take a break to go ahead and talk more about this in the next segment. Fascinating stuff. I have many more questions I want to ask you about this and, of course, your book here. But before we talk about the website and the publisher and the title and stuff again, one final thought on this. Is there any way, any estimation at this stage of like how much money they have, or even if we count that in terms of gold, how much gold they actually have access to? Because it seems to me as well that a lot of gold has actually been disappearing, if I can put it that way, through the last few years. It's gone. It's been taken out, taken away somewhere.
Yeah. I wrote a short article on the Bank for International Settlements. Those are the granddaddy of all central banks in the world, created by the Jesuits via their accountants, the House of Rothschild. And of course, it's in Switzerland. And you got to wonder.
The gnomes of Zurich. Yeah, I've heard about that.
Yeah, that's right. That's right, exactly. And the Bank for International Settlements, I think in that article, I suggested that the number that you just asked about is in the quadrillions of dollars.
Hmm. Wow.
Not trillions, quadrillions.
Yeah.
And that's just an unfathomable amount of money. But when you just do some basic math, and I did that, it's anything but false. And interestingly, too, after I came out with that article, they pulled a lot of their information from their website.
All right. Well, there you go. That's interesting. Now, I'm going to ask you more about this in the next segment, but let's talk a little bit about the publisher here first, Adagio Press. I'm going to spell that out for you guys out there so you can go over there. Adagiopress.com, Adagiopress.com. That's the website where you can pick up a copy of the book here that we have been talking about. And the full title again is Who Really Owns Your Gold? With a subtitle of The Intended Global Meltdown of 2012. And extending into 2014, as you said, we're going to talk more about this next. But no, if you want to know more, pick up a copy of the book and continue reading. It's a fast read, as Dean said, and highly encouraged. Very interesting stuff in there, condensed in a very good way. So go ahead and do that. Now, we're going to take a short break here then, Dean. So let's do that, and we'll return with more briefly. So stay on the line. We'll be right back. To continue listening to the second hour, you need a membership. To subscribe, go to redicemembers.com and click on subscribe to sign up and get full access to our new website filled with exciting programs going back to 2006. A vast amount of material for you to dig into. We have, on the new website, vastly superior RSS feeds. You can now get any program back to the start. Our radio feeds are divided by year. We also have a feed with the 50 latest programs, and this is an excellent way, by the way, of getting an alert as soon as a new program is released. If you have any questions, please take the time to click into our FAQ for further help and assistance. So, from now on, existing members, go to redicemembers.com and bookmark it, and you can download the entire program right there. Use our new search function. It's simple and quick. You can comment on any program and let your fellow Red Ice members know what you think about the show. Next up on Red Ice Radio, we have Bill Still, creator of The Money Masters and The Secrets of Oz. After this, Mark Grant, Randall Carlson, Freeman and Jamie, Charles Upton, Santos Bonacci and Sterling and Peggy Seagrave, to name a few. We hope to have you with us soon again. But right now, more with William Dean A. Garner on redicemembers.com.